Hey guys, welcome to episode number 32 of the Dave and Mead podcast. So it's been about 2.5 years since I last recorded. I've been meaning to get the podcast back up and running. It's been a long time, but this one I'm very excited to have recorded because it means a lot to me. It means a lot to Papua New Guinea, the place where I was born and spent the first 12 years of my life. And it's also an important one because it was also recorded on the fly in PNG. No script, no prep, just 2 road mics, an iPhone and a tripod, and a real raw conversation from the heart. So in this episode, I sit down with Bronwyn Wright, who is the CEO of the Sir Brian Bell Foundation, and someone who's played a massive role in mentoring me and helping me transition from professional rugby league to my next chapter. She's also helped me see PNG through a different lens, a lens that's filled with pride, possibility and purpose. We chat about her family's deep connection in PNG, the legacy of the late Sir Brian Bell, and why improving women's health through her health hub is a mission that cannot wait. We also dive into the January 10 crisis, how it rocked the nation, impacted thousands, and how hard it hit businesses like Brian Bell. The story is about grit, unity, and backing your people when they need it the most. Brian Bell started in 1958 and has been serving Papua New Guineans for over 67 years, building not just a business, but a legacy of community impact. This one's about rising through adversity, leading with heart, and choosing to show up even when it's tough. Have a listen, guys. Bron is a great friend and someone who is fun, I think is very intelligent, and someone who has a big heart. If you guys saw the work that she does, as well as the team at Sir Brian Bell Foundation, I think you guys will be deeply touched and deeply moved. So please enjoy this episode. This one's about rising through adversity, leading with heart, and choosing to show up even when it's tough. I hope you enjoy.
Yeah, Bron, welcome to the very first podcast / vlog / what we're doing in Palma and okay. Everything am all
I
in
your,
one.
Am I your first guest in this format?
Very, very first one. So
really? That's... Yeah. Okay,
so this is slightly cool. Different. This is we're in Palm, in your boardroom, actually.
Yes, Brian Bell Boardroom in Barocco. Yes. Yep.
I want to start with your story a bit first, Brian.
Okay.
So I know we met a few years ago and you've told me a bit about your story.
Mm-hmm.
Let's let everyone know who Brian is.
Oh, goodness.
Where did life start for you?
Life started here in Port Moresby. So my family has always been in PNG. So have been here since I was born. I went to primary school here. And then like many of my friends, we went to, we had the wonderful opportunity to go to Australia for boarding school. And then from there, I kind of went to university and did lots of different things, but all as a proud Papua New Guinean. So I think we always joke, my brother and I, that we might be the palest Papua New Guineans that you might see, but proud nonetheless. So.
Yeah. That's all good. I'm sure there's a few extras out there who claim the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, I've met many, you know, someone was talking to me the other day asking me about, you know, people who blow up about PNG Kumuls players who don't look, who don't have the skin tone. And I said, man, if you only understood what the parents and grandparents did for this country, your perception would change very, very quickly. So,
yeah. Well, our family has been in Papua New Guinea, 20, 25 years ahead of independence. So we turned 50 this year as a country. And, our family's been here for about 75. So it's, we're third gen in this business, and we're PNG all the way.
Yep. Well, you get to walk through the other visa spot.
Yes.
And I'm a visa on arrival. So you're more PNG.
Yes, yes. I have my proud PNG passport, and we're 100% PNG owned company. We're a proud PNG family, proud Papua New Guineans, and, in the work that we do every day at Brian Bell, but also the work that we do every day in the foundation is support and lift and raise awareness in issues that are prevalent in PNG and for the everyday Papua New Guinean.
Yeah. So let's talk a bit about the foundation.
I am personally, but also professionally, incredibly interested in the work that we do and the people that we support and how they do the work on the ground and how do I make their life easier? Because it's really hard doing things in PNG, as we all know, but it's how do I make the work that they're doing able to be done in a way where they're not thinking, oh, we've been able to do this much. We just know we can take that next step, but we just don't know how. I sometimes come in with the thought process of, well, we can be the how. We can be the engine that kind of gets you, you know, to that next step of providing the crucial support on the ground that you're doing. So, I roll my sleeves up. I mean, all of us do. I have a fantastic support squad. You're part of that, that roll up our sleeves every day and support, you know, Papua New Guinea in meaningful ways across the country. So, yeah. But, I think to myself, well, you know, I'm incredibly privileged to do what I do every day and in the name of the person that I do it every day and represent the team across, you know, the Brian Bell Group in the foundation. But I don't know why people would kind of want to hear from me or what we do. I think we just get on with it. It's always been kind of our way is we just get it done.
Yeah.
And then sometimes we actually forget to talk about it or we have a conversation with somebody like yourself and you go, man, like you maybe need to talk about this more.
Yeah. Because I feel like
we're just busy. Done. Yeah. We're busy doing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty important to listen to people who are doing things because that's what everyone wants to do.
Yeah.
To get things done. So,
yeah.
Yes. I feel like I talk a lot more than I do. And so it's kind of like, I wouldn't say I feel bad about it. I know I've got the NRL experience behind me.
Mm-hmm.
So there's I know how to get to A from A to B.
Yeah.
And everyone's got their different path to where they want to get to. Mm. There's not, you know, I try and share my blueprint of how I got from A, the village,
mm-hmm.
to B, playing in the NRL. It's not the only way. It's certainly not the best way, but it is a way. That was my way. If you want to do it this way, you can do it. So sometimes I'm like, am I talking too much and not doing enough? Is that talking actually doing, or is it? I mean, I know inspiration is perishable, so I try to create that for myself and young kids coming through as well. But you're doing the opposite. You're just getting things done and not really talking about it. And I was like, we need to put a light on that so people can see the amazing work that you've done here in PNG, well, alongside the team as well. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's really important. And I think that's what we have in common is that, you know, our personal success or our professional success is absolutely, you know, intrinsically linked with the people that are part of our team. And you're only as good as the people that you have around you. And we absolutely can't do what we do in the foundation every day and support the people we do across the country in that important work if it wasn't for our 1,300 team members being incredibly supportive and engaged with our vision and our mission and our values and our behaviours across the group but also at the foundation. It just wouldn't be possible.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So I know that foundation started 9 years ago.
Yes, we just celebrated our 9th birthday.
But the work has been done many years before that, to that point.
Yeah, absolutely. So Brian Bell was my grandfather or our grandfather and the founder of obviously this organisation is known and is still known as one of PNG's greatest philanthropists. He unfortunately passed away in 2010 and he wanted his, you know, work in the space of health and education that he had started to do personally and as a company that he supported. He wanted that work to continue. And so when he passed away, he kind of put in place the foundation, so to speak. And then once we kind of knew as a family what we wanted to do with that foundation, we decided to kind of do it? Well, I guess we didn't. We had many conversations around, well, what did we want the foundation to look and feel like? Was it just going to be an arm of the organization that just supported, you know, certain things financially? Or was it going to be a foundation that really, like I said, rolled up their sleeves and got engaged with, you know, community issues, you know, trying to assist people do the work on the ground that is incredibly important, you know, just all of that stuff, kind of getting dirty in the stuff that needs to happen around the country, because there is no shortage of support that's required for the everyday Papua New Guinean. And, you know, we have 1,300 team members around the country, and we see it every day with just, you know, what they're dealing with in their own personal lives and in their communities in which they live. And we think, okay, well, if we can take care of our team, we certainly can take care of the communities that surround and support them as well. And it's just grown from there. It started very small, and then we've kind of just, grown.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, very busy.
I know one person who he had an impact on. I was talking to him yesterday at the coffee shop, actually, Marcus Boy.
Yeah.
So Marcus was like, oh, what are you doing tomorrow? I said, I'm actually doing some work with the Sir Brian Bell Foundation. And he was like, oh, man, I'll tell you what, I've got some good stories with that.
Yeah.
So Brian, he said, you know, one day the NRL season was over, and I flew in and I met him. And he said, hey, Max, what are you doing over the next few weeks? He said, oh, I'm just going to my home for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I'll be back in 2 weeks. And so he said, okay, well, yeah, when you come back, we'll catch up. Anyway, so Marcus got on the plane, got back, and then he was actually supposed to get a connecting flight to Melbourne or Brisbane or Melbourne that day. And then there was one of the team members, staff members from Brian Bell were waiting, and they said, oh, hey, so Brian, he wants you to come and, you know, his chat from 2 weeks ago, he said he remembered. And he said, oh, okay, what are you, I've got a connecting flight. At 1 o'clock, he's like, oh, he's already cancelled it and booked your flight for tomorrow. He's like, oh, geez, okay. And then and then off they went. But he said, man, he just remembered the conversation.
Yeah.
And this is back in the day.
The
early days when he first started.
Well, I don't know if you can see. So there's my grandfather was one of the lucky Papua New Guineans, along with Marcus, actually. I think they were on the same route of where they were running with the Sydney 2000 Olympic torch here in PNG. And we have a wonderful photo of, you know, obviously Grandpa, he didn't run, but he walked with the Olympic torch. And we have a wonderful photo actually at home of him and Marcus in their Olympic gear and with the torch. So I'll have to share that with him.
Yeah.
I don't think he's got a copy of it.
Okay.
But, that's great memories. And, you know, I was a huge, like, Marcus Bai fan.
So was I. Yeah.
Who isn't, right?
Yeah. I took a video with him this morning, actually.
Yeah, you're like, oh, my goodness, Marcus.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he's really lovely. And I know my grandfather really, really liked Marcus.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's only one Papua New Guinea. You know, the impact he's had on the numerous amount of people who were here from, you know, when the stores opened it. And we talk about inspiring people. He actually employed people and made a practical difference in many, many people's lives. And I said to Marcus, you know, we inspire kids to play footy, which is good. They stay healthy and active.
Yeah.
When you got someone like that who comes in and creates jobs, creates employment, someone who can use money to buy food and, you know, feed their family, put their kids in school. I said, man, I reckon that's a bigger impact than what we do as, you know, rugby league players. And he was like,
yeah, I think, you know, any assistance or any motivation is a good thing. Doesn't matter. There's a place for all of it.
Yeah.
I think that it was wonderful growing up in an environment where you saw your grandparents and then your parents, you know, really live out the values and behaviors that we try and live every day here as a business and as, you know, a team community. And you know, it just was ingrained in us, I think, without really knowing that it was all about, you know, us having the ability to help and that it was absolutely our responsibility to do so. And, you know, I think I always joke with you, you know, huge Marvel fan, and it's the whole like Spider-Man thing, you know, where great power comes great responsibility. And I think, you know, not suggesting that we have power, but everyone has their own personal power. But I think that as a group, as an organization, as a foundation, we do have a power in terms of, you know, how we lead with, you know, empathy, with kindness, how we listen to issues, how we listen to our team and try and figure out, well, like solutions to everyday kind of issues that everybody is facing. But we learned that from a really early age, but we didn't learn it because somebody told us we had to be that way. We learned it because we saw it in action and we saw it in practice. And so I think it was ingrained in us that we wanted to put the power in that role of responsibility by making sure that, you know, we did lead with all of those particular attributes, but that when we saw we could assist, where we saw we could help or shine light on a situation or an issue, that we would do so because we had the, you know, wonderful platform that we have as, you know, an organization that has, from a brand perspective, people kind of know the B, know Brian Bell, now hopefully know the foundation and what we do and what we stand for and what we want to try and achieve. And hopefully that means that people, you know, tune into our socials and what we're talking about and become educated on some of the issues, but then understand why we actually are trying to talk about the issues that we are. And, but it's not about just talking about it. It's about then tackling it with action. So what does it actually mean? There's an education piece, but then there's an action piece. And talking about action, Priscilla's going.
Priscilla's going to walk in. Yeah, next, so we're going to cut it short. But before we finish, Brian, I know we're here for, I think we answered one question I had.
I think so. I know. But we also have a lot of time maybe at the airport as well, right? So, but
while we're in the flow.
Yes.
Actually, we might talk about her health hub at the airport or here.
I don't mind.
Okay, let's. I know the foundation does, you know, hundreds of thousands of different things with several partners, but this trip in particular, we're here for her health hub.
Yep.
Can you tell us? You know, I know we're short for time, but in
I will.
Why her health hub and
yeah,
what do people need to do?
Yeah, absolutely. Myself was personally kind of interested and had seen through some of the plights of our team members what cervical cancer and having this particular cancer looked like and how there was the roadblocks in care but also the roadblocks in testing. I just couldn't understand that one of the world's most preventable cancers wasn't being prevented. But I understood that there was lots of roadblocks and there were, like everything in PNG, it is hard to kind of ensure that you're tackling an issue with respect to all the other people who have, you know, subject matter experts on the issue. And, you know, little old me who thinks, hey, we can do something here. I had to be really respectful in terms of my ultimate knowledge. I had the want, I had the desire to assist the situation. I just didn't know how to. Then it took me a couple of years of having some really good conversations with amazing people around the country who work in this space to say, well, you know, if I was able to do anything, how could I help? How could I make you do your job better? Or how could we make this more accessible for our women in PNG? So that conversation kind of has been in parallel to kind of, you know, the 9-to-5 job. But then it was one conversation that I had with another like-minded individual, so Sir Mahesh Patel from CPL, and he, like myself, was very interested and engaged in this issue and wanted to do something about it. And we had one conversation just over 12 months ago on the Gold Coast, actually, at a PNG Australia business conference. And he said, this is what I was thinking. And I said, well, your ability or what you can bring to this partnership or to this issue is exactly what I don't have and vice versa. So let's do something together. And it was one conversation and, 12 months later, we have her health hub and, you know, it is a partner, it's a private partnership. And we just knew that we both wanted the same things. It was access for women to this test, access to treatment, access to referrals, and then access to any more acuity care for this particular issue if need be. But it was about testing. And as I said to you the other day, you know, if someone comes to our clinic and is positive through their test, 90% of the time we can treat on site and you're good. The other 10% is you may need a referral to one of our, key subject matter experts at PomGen and obstetrics and gynecology department, but we have access to there and they're a key partner to her health hub. So we've kind of, shattered some of those roadblocks to care and access to people that women need access to, and most importantly, access to this test, but a test that now is affordable to the everyday Papua New Guinean. So this test has been available in PNG. However, it hasn't been at this price point. So really, you know, financially, it hasn't been accessed because it's just too expensive. Now for 20 kina, you can have this test, but most importantly, an hour later, you get your result.
Yeah.
And then from there, it's either great, I've done the test and I'm negative, or okay, I've done the test, I'm positive, but now I have this support system through her health hub to make sure that I'm okay and I get the care that I need.
Yeah.
And that's really important. And that's, what we've been able to achieve together as two private, foundations is we've just gone, okay, well, this is an issue we both really want to tackle. We both have the abilities to tackle it from two different sides of a potential solution. So let's partner and do something about it. And we've done it. And, they're standing at Bedili. We have a fantastic team. The Western Highlands Provincial Health Authority, the Kirby Institute, NCDPHA, PomGen, Obstetrics and Gynecology team. You know, we've got some wonderful partners that have, backed us and our ability to do this particular project. And, we're seeing, so many women come and not just from Port Moresby, but I think I mentioned to you. We've got people who are flying in from other centres of PNG, booking their appointment, getting on a plane, coming and do their appointment because they know they can do their appointment, have their test, be screened, get their result in an hour and understand where they are in their health journey with
HPV. And one of them was a doctor too?
Correct.
Yes. And so that's, it just kind of shows.
Absolutely.
The limited access that people have here.
Absolutely. So we're kind of, 5 weeks in, I think, or, slightly over that in terms of the clinic being open. And we're seeing so many women come and engage in that process. But most importantly, we've seen so many stories of, men stepping up and taking care of the women in their life and seeing the opportunity for the access of this test and bringing their loved ones to the clinic and organizing that appointment and being part of that process. And so that's been a really nice story.
Yeah. Oh, man, that is so cool. And one conversation is all it took and the rest was action. So
it was all action. And that's the thing. I think people think that sure, we've got the means. Both entities have the means to act quickly. And I think we also have the means because we understand business and we get lots of things done in our everyday business all the time. So we just kind of have that attitude. But the people from CPL and the foundation, and obviously our team, have really engaged so closely together because we're all aligned on the mission.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful partnership, and I couldn't be more thankful for it.
It is so cool, Bron. Yeah, I had goosebumps at the center on Tuesday, it was.
Yep.
Just the way, you know, you and the staff member who was there on site, you know, she was saying, you know, testing and stuff, all that. But for me, the biggest part was the counseling that comes after.
Yes.
They sit there with the mums and say, you know, you'll be okay. Yeah. These are the next steps.
Yeah.
And you don't get that anywhere else. So that's why I was like, man, I would goosebumps saying it now. Mm. That type of care is, you know, I think a lot more people could do with.
Yeah.
That type of support. So, yeah. Amazing work with HHH, Her Health Hub.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Incredibly proud of it.
Yeah. It's so cool, Bron. So, guys, make sure you take your loved ones there. Many females in our lives who, you know, very important to us, they need to, you know, be proactive. Just like us, we need to be proactive with our health and make sure that everyone around us is proactive with this, because, you know, it's one of the biggest killers, and we want to make sure that something that is preventable is like that doesn't affect us. So,
Bron, I think our tagline was, it's, you know, take a day, take a test.
Take a day, take a test.
Yep. It's couldn't be more accurate.
Yeah.
So sure. All it takes is that time, and just one day is all you need to understand where you are and to have that peace of mind.
Yeah. Get them in there, boys, men. Make sure you go in. Stop and Shop Badili. As you drive in, it's right there. You can't miss it. So make sure you get there. All right, Bron. Were you a superstar in school?
No. Schooling. So I went to primary school here in Port Moresby. So I went to Murray International Primary School, and it was awesome. Loved it. And I'm still friends with a lot of the people I went to primary school with, which is amazing. And after that, I many of our friends or people who had the opportunity to, we were sent to Australia to boarding school for our high schooling. So I went down to Brisbane for 5 years and did my schooling there as a boarder.
How old were you then?
And so I went grade 8 to grade 12. Yep. So I think I was 14. Yeah, 14-ish. So did 5 years at boarding school. Again, loved it. And then after that, I did a diploma of business. And then after that, I went on to get a degree in business.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
High school, did you crush all the challenges that came your way? And actually, what was the biggest challenge you found in high school, and what did you do to
get past it? Look, I suffered from homesickness. I just wanted to be back here and back with my family and what I knew. What was really nice, though, is where I went to boarding school, there was a huge PNG community that came to that school as well. So a lot of the boarding house was filled with Papua New Guineans or people who had a connection with Papua New Guinea. So when we all felt homesick, we all kind of banded together and felt homesick together and kind of got through that as well. I did a lot of sports. So I played tennis at school. So a lot of my time away from kind of the schoolwork was playing tennis. And so I wouldn't say that I was the most excellent student. I'm one of these people that I've got to work for the results that you achieve.
Yeah.
But I did okay and have done so okay.
Definitely put the work in. Homesickness was one. Peer pressure, I do a bit of work with Broncos as well.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with rugby league. A lot to do with Indigenous girls in around Brisbane, northern New South Wales, and then, you know, out west, Queensland as well. And NRLW players and the NRL players came up with a program to help kids in high school pretty much go from A to B, whether you want to be an athlete, you know, whatever career you want to take on, further studies.
Yeah.
And a lot of the, one of the main points is peer pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's one of the biggest issues that high schoolers face, especially in person and also through social media.
Yeah.
So did you ever face any of that? And
look, I think peer pressure is everywhere in, especially in everyone's kind of growing up experience. There's certainly times in which that comes along. I think when I look back to it, I'm not sure if there really was a lot. However, I can talk to it because I have teenage girls and I've got a young son, and especially for teenage girls at the moment, I mean, it's really hard to be growing up in this time. And I do, I see the challenges of just what it is to grow up and to become a teenager and go through all of those changes and start having your own opinions and critical thinking and friendships and what's a good friendship look like, what does a not so great one look like, you know, those scenarios. You hope that your kids get into scenarios where they kind of go, you know what, that doesn't really feel right or sound right, and hopefully make a good choice or a better choice, or at least have a thought process around, okay, what are the risks around this decision? I see that more now as a parent looking at my kids rather than how I link it to me growing up.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up in the social media age. Thank goodness. I mean, because our kids have this, I always think to myself, like, they just don't want to fail or look silly or seem to be thinking or somebody thinking that they don't know something or that they're stupid or, you know, that they're embarrassing. No one kind of puts themselves in those circumstances because they're too afraid of being filmed, of being recorded, of people who they don't know, you know, responding to them on a social media post and saying, hey, this is what I think about you, even though they don't know each other. And so I'm really pleased I grew up in the time that I did because, you know, we could make some not so great decisions and not be caught out about it.
Yeah.
Or we could, you know, fail 1,000 times but get up 1,000 times and not have everyone have their own personal opinion about it.
Yeah.
So just move on through it. So I'm really pleased that I grew up in the time that I did, but I certainly am engrossed with the time of growing up now thanks to being a parent. So
yeah.
But it's hard. It incredibly is hard. Difficult.
I look at my two boys and I look at them and go, I hope you don't get up to the stuff that I got up to as a teenager too, you know,
because yeah.
I mean, I had some goals and I was into sports, so I mm-hmm. think that really kept me grounded.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I think I was always a pretty good kid growing up as well. My auntie was very disciplined. Mm. And yeah, it's during the, especially 16, 17, 10, when the parties are starting and
yeah.
You just, you know, you can easily go off track if you don't have some
direction. Those guardrails. Yeah, absolutely.
In front of you. So, you know, my friends and I, we're still best mates from those days to mm-hmm. now, and we kind of look back and go, geez, how do we get through high school like that?
And luckily no one actually knows a lot of the stories about it either.
teenagers, even, you know, the early 20s and stuff. Mm. But, I mean, I guess some of the – yeah, so staying on the teenage stuff, the peer pressure,
mm.
just because it's, I guess it's the top of my mind because that's what I do
yeah.
on a week to week now. And, yeah, it is good to get that perspective, especially going through as a teenager and then now having daughters and how you deal with it. Now I've got friends who have teenage daughters and, you know, they do it pretty tough as well because
yeah.
it's a very challenging time. But boys as yeah. well.
Oh, it's just challenging to be a parent, like yeah. throughout all of the ages. And I think it's interesting because, you know, as they get older, people think that, you know, oh, maybe we can step back a little bit because the kids are older. They should be able to do all these things and maybe we don't need to be as present. And, you know, I kind of find that we need to be more present or just around so they know that they can reach out or that we're close enough to reach out when they need us.
Yeah.
It's just in terms of the pressures also young people in this time of growing up and in this time in the world and in this time, you know, even in PNG, it's incredibly difficult because times are really tough.
Yeah.
And families are doing it incredibly, you know, tough as well. So a lot of those decision-making processes are maybe not the right ones, but they were kind of done for the right reasons, if that makes sense. You can kind of, I think I go back to, I guess, those feelings that we all had after January 10th of last year. And, you know, a lot of people didn't make very good decisions. However, when we sit down and we reflect on it, we kind of understand why those decisions were made. It was just unfortunate that the pull, and you suggest that peer pressure or seeing everyone, that kind of herd mentality of, you know, acting a particular way and possibly putting their normal everyday values and beliefs and behaviors to the side and engaging in what was going on, that's what took over rather than going, no, this is not right.
Yeah.
But it's easy to understand how that escalated so quick and why the decisions were made by certain people to maybe not behave in the best way. And that was disheartening, truthfully, and crushing. Yeah. I mean, as an organization that lost a lot on January 10th, just as a team and obviously as a family and all of us as proud Papua New Guineans and people who work every day to serve Papua New Guinea, It was hard to see that, but I'm pleased we're on the other side of it. And I can't lose sight or the hope that the more we educate, the more we kind of engage with youth, the more that we do in communities might make the next time they're in that position, they choose a different circumstance, they choose a different behavior, and they realize, no, I'm not going to be a part of this.
What was the impact of that, of those actions of January 10 on the organization as a whole, but then, you know, also the individuals within the organization? What was the impact? Because there was a big herd mentality.
Yeah.
Going, take, take, take. We don't know how those people felt after. I hope guilty and ashamed, at least.
Yeah.
Because it's purely just the wrong thing to do. There's a right and wrong.
Yeah.
Everyone knows. Hell and heaven. Everyone knows about hell and heaven. You know, some actions are going to take you to hell, some to heaven. I know not everyone's religious, but I'm going to the extreme version. We know right and wrong. How did it impact the staff coming to work?
Look, I think it was incredibly difficult for everybody and for lots of different reasons. I mean, we had team members who were actually at our warehouse that inevitably got, you know, broken into and ransacked and then ultimately burnt to the ground that same day. We had team members there that were basically on the front line of seeing and feeling all of that. We were lucky enough that no one was hurt, that no one, you know, was seriously injured. However, in terms of, I guess, the psychological effect of that, I mean, it was incredibly difficult. And for a long time, I think that that feeling was felt throughout the organization because we are a family and the way in which we work, all of us work so closely with one another, even in our other centers and our other locations. We're all one team. And so when one person hurts, we all do. And it was, and we take it incredibly personally. And so a lot of our team members were very upset, but also angry. There was so much anger that, you know, people could do this.
Yeah. But there was also I came a week or two later,
yeah,
just to have a chat to them.
Yeah.
And one of the questions was, you know, Dave, what would you do after your place has been burned down and you're wearing the Brian Bell shirt, going to work, and people are teasing you?
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I didn't think it would get any lower than that.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? People say what they want to say. Mm. It's a sign of them just hurting themselves, and they're trying to just drag others down with them.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they would have been incredibly upset. Yeah.
It was incredibly difficult. And, yeah, you're right. Like, it just what goes through somebody's mind when, you know, your workplace has been burnt down and they're taking joy in some way of rubbing it in. It's but look, you know, the thing is that, as you say, people can say all the things and be all the things, but it's how you respond and how you react to those things that differentiates, I guess, our team. We've been incredibly resilient, and there was so much work that everybody did. It was just everyone just mucked in and rolled up their sleeves and got in and did the jobs that needed to be done and support everybody who needed support. And, you know, we're on the it was nice for the clock to tick over the 2025 this year, because last year was tough. And, you know, we obviously, from a business side of things, we do see we're still dealing with the aftermath of that. You know, we don't have a warehouse, but we're rebuilding at the moment. That's unlocked other opportunities for us as a business, and you know, we just have to move forward.
Yeah.
But what I'm incredibly proud about is that we've done all of that thanks to the amazing leadership at the Brian Bell Group, but every single team member doing what I just said, rolling up their sleeves and mucking in, and doing the situation of, you know, we understand what needs to be done to bounce back. And, you know, some people may have seen our Build Back Better campaigns, and we have done that. And I think personally, professionally, from an infrastructure point of view, the way we do business, the way we engage with community, the work we do at the foundation, it certainly was a reset button. So in some ways, I think, you know, we've kind of gone, right, draw a line in the sand, let's move on.
Yeah.
But I am incredibly proud of the work that's been done and to be associated with the group, because we've done all of that without any support back from those entities that told us that they were going to support us on the back of, you know, the aftermath and what we lost in January 10. So
I couldn't believe it, just seeing it all unfold. Updates through social media, you know, you see all this horrendous behavior. I say horrendous because people know what's right and wrong. And then just to see the reaction, the response to it.
Yeah.
From the months that followed, that was, I can't even say heartwarming because it was much more than that. Just to see the team was very, very well looked after, cared for, and everyone's well-being was taken care of. So, you know, I think hats off to the team for making sure that the staff were the well-being was looked after, and and then obviously taking care of the business side as well.
And I think that, you know, we are a people business, and so if your, you know, team aren't in a place where they can come to work and perform well in their jobs or perform well as a team, then you're not kind of going to move forward.
Yeah.
So it was really important for us to make sure that we looked after the team.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was lots of organizations that unfortunately, given the aftermath of January 10, had to let go of some of their team because they just weren't able to keep them on.
Yeah.
You know, we worked so hard to make sure that that was never in question. Our team knew that they were always going to have a job, that they always, you know, were going to be part of the team and we were going to look after them. And this was a hurdle, that we were just going to have to jump over. And so the team that, you know, lost their place of work that they went to every day just got redeployed very quickly to other areas. And I think that also helped with their well-being and their kind of understanding of, okay, well, I don't have to worry about having a job or not.
There's a sense of security there.
Yeah, there was a sense of security in that respect. And then it was the work around, you know, coming together as a team, and you were part of those conversations through our Belong campaign, was you do belong at Brian Bell, and to belong, there are certain values and beliefs that we believe in at work, but that we believe in terms of our everyday life and the way we serve our families and community. And unfortunately, there was a bit of a breakdown in that, but we're going to move forward knowing that this is what we know, and this is how we're going to do things. And everyone just got jumped on board, and as I said, we built back better.
Definitely built back better, Bronwyn.
It's a good tagline. Just having that in the back of your head, going, okay, we're resetting, we're building back, and we're doing it better. It was just what we all had to say.
Yeah.
To ourselves and to each other.
Yeah.
To keep motivated.
Yeah, that's incredible. Just to see the turnaround from there to here. It feels like yesterday it happened, but
yeah,
there's also a lot of good things that have been done as well.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit of fun stuff now.
Okay.
I used to have these rapid fire questions about, you know, 8 to 10.
Okay.
I'm going to see if my memories comes back, because I have a few written down.
Okay.
First thing off the cuff that comes to mind, doesn't, as long as you want, as short as you want.
Okay.
What's your favorite sport?
Tennis.
Favorite music or song artist?
I would say pop and R&B. My absolute favorite artist is Janet Jackson, followed by Beyonce. I could list lots of different people, but yes.
Those two, okay. If you were, what's your spirit animal? If you were an animal in a spirit sense,
yeah,
what would it be?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. What would it be? I don't know. Maybe a dog, because, you know, they get cuddles and looked after, and they're part of a family. Yeah.
Okay.
I might come back to that one
because I was going to say I've said I'm a dog too.
Oh, really?
But you know, just not in the cuddly sense.
I'm just thinking about my puppy right now. Yeah. I'm thinking, oh wow, she gets a lot of cuddles. Yeah. I like that.
Your perspective on dog was very different. I said, I'm just like a village dog, you know.
Oh, just, right, you know, okay. Just one of the ones you know, that you've got to swerve as you
gotta
as
avoid
you drive.
Them, they'll bite you, and chase you. And chase you if you are if you are getting their territory. What would you put on a billboard for everyone to see on their way to work every morning?
Oh, I don't know. I think it would be like a phrase of some kind. Oh, goodness. I wish I was super motivational. You know how, like, you see definitely on socials now, there's so many people who have podcasts or, you know, are in interviews, and they're prominent people, and they're just able to kind of inspire you with just a phrase, and you go, yes, and you kind of want to live that through the day.
Yeah.
I get that all the time. I wish I was, you know, that visionary to be able to say something that would inspire somebody or be meaningful. So I don't know. I think for me, maybe not on a billboard, but something that I know kind of, you know, if I'm feeling, oh goodness, can I do this? Or, you know, am I right to do this? Do I have the skill set to do this? Are the people that I surround myself with, do they have the skill set to do this? Is it doable? I then kind of switch over to, no, I can do this, and I'm happy to prove people wrong. And so I always say, like, underestimate me, that'll be fun, because that kind of gets me going. Because there's been a lot of that, I think, not underestimating, you know, me personally. I'm just saying sometimes there's been feedback of some of the stuff that we do, and people have gone, I just don't think you're going to get traction there.
Mm.
Or I don't think this conversation is going to land, or you raising an issue about X, Y, and Z may not be the right thing. And I've kind of had a bit of a gut feel and kind of done it anyway. And luckily, a lot of that stuff has turned out well. But I do like that.
Prove them wrong.
Yeah. I'm actually one of those people that if someone says, hey, I don't think you can do something, I'm like, game on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, underestimate me. That'll be fun. Somebody said that to me, or I heard that many years ago, and that's something that I say.
Man, talk about inspiration. That'll get you fired up on the way to work, seeing that on a billboard, I think. You know.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah,
what was it again?
So underestimate me. That'll be fun.
That'll be fun. I'm writing that down for sure. it's like the underdog story, right?
Yeah.
Being underestimated.
Yeah, but it's also about just, you know, the fun in making sure that it's not about just showing people that you can do stuff. It's all about that, you know, call to action. It's all about that action, you know, piece and just getting it done. And, yeah, and that's the fun part, showing people how things can be done when they say that you might not be able to do them. So.
Yeah, I think a podcast is appropriate, I reckon, for my listeners.
Mm.
If I kind of look back at all the – when I first started playing first grade.
Yeah.
After my first game, I kind of came off the field and my first thought was to all the doubters, you know, out there.
Yeah.
I kind of just, like, get that up, yeah, you know.
Yeah. That kind well, of it's kind of like that mic drop moment, yeah. Right? It's like, and, well
– yeah, you don't want to get it too far ahead of yourself, but it's also like a –
yeah.
Yeah, I proved them
but
wrong.
But the thing is that in the action of proving the scenario incorrect, it's all about hard work.
Yeah.
Like you can't do any of that stuff without hard work.
Yeah. I think you have to kind of thank them too in a way. Like, thanks for the firewood.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Throw more in there.
Yeah. I've certainly had a few people in my life and in kind of my past kind of professional, you know, careers that have kind of been those doubters or have said certain things to me that have actually motivated me to go, no, I can do this.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know if it's intentional, but that one was for the people who were intentionally saying, yeah, Nate, you're making that.
Yeah, yeah.
But the others who were like, no, I don't think you are. They don't really worry me.
Yeah.
But it's the one that say, no, and I remember these conversations so vividly too because as soon as you do it, you know, you're so happy that you got there, but at the same time you're like,
yep.
Yeah. Told you.
Told you.
What's your favorite snack?
Ooh, chocolate.
Chocolate. Any brand?
I love Cadbury Breakaway.
Breakaway.
My favorite.
Yeah. I used to, you know, the Aero.
Oh, yeah.
The mint one.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm not really a big chocolate fan, but when I first, I wouldn't say when I first got into chocolate, but I had chocolate on my whole thing. But that's the one that always, yeah, you know.
That was your go-to?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know I asked you this for the billboard, and it's probably the same thing, but. Mm-hmm. Have you got like a favorite quote or saying? I know you love your Marvel movies. Maybe it's a Marvel or something someone said to you.
I think that I don't really have sayings that I remember. I certainly have. I remember how I felt at certain times when people have said certain things that were motivating or inspirational. And I think that's more of what kind of fires me up is that feeling of being motivated and being inspired by other people who are doing really amazing things or doing things that I would just love to do and doing it really well. And, yeah, so, no, I don't have a favorite saying or a favorite quote or anything like that. Apart from underestimate me, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
But... There's more so the feeling of being motivated and inspired by lots of different people that or tune into particular podcasts or read particular books or, you know, see snippets of interviews from, you know, people that I hold in high regard doing really important work around, you know, the world, that I go, oh, goodness, yeah, that makes me feel like I think I'm on the right track, that I'm doing the right thing.
Ah, awesome.
Certainly not at the level that these people are doing it, but I'm doing a really small bit, and we're all doing a really small bit, but at least we're doing.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a small bit, but I think I've only seen a glimpse of it, and that glimpse is bigger than what I could imagine someone contributing. So I know you're definitely downplaying it. Oh, sorry, not downplaying it, but, you know, there's a lot of humility that comes with the work that you do. Which I see it firsthand, but there's also a lot of things you're doing. So, appreciate the work that you do for PNG and everyone else too, Bron.
Thank you. That's nice. And I'll tell the team you said that as well, because, like I said, you're only as good as the people that you surround yourself with, and I have some pretty amazing people I surround myself with.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Tell the team to listen to the podcast.
Oh, again. Possibly. Yeah. I don't know if they really want to hear from me again. Yeah. I mean,
I'm sure they will.
I doubt it.
I'll yell it on our way out from the boardroom. We just recorded a podcast.
No, they'll be like, oh, goodness, hearing Bronwyn again speak about stuff. Goodness.
Two more things.
Yes.
What's one book that you would recommend?
Moment of Lift.
Moment of Lift. And finally, what would you say to a 16-year-old Bronwyn Wright?
Maybe underestimate me. That'll be fun. Because I think sometimes you do underestimate what you're able to contribute. I think everyone deals at some time with a little bit of what they call, you know, imposter syndrome. Like, why am I sitting at this table? Why am I having these conversations? You know, why would anyone be interested in what I might have to say or what some of my opinions are on certain issues? And I think if I was, talking to myself at 16, I think I'd pinch myself thinking about what I do now and what we're involved in and the business and what we do every day. Like, that's pinch yourself stuff. Yeah. And it's a privilege, an absolute privilege to do the stuff that we do. So I'd pinch myself and then I'd say to myself, like, yeah, underestimate me, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
And just knowing kind of what the next couple of decades of you know, adventure has been.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. And maybe there's some cool stuff coming too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So, but, you know, and the thing is that we talk – and I guess we're talking now, like, professionally, right, about what we're, you know, doing. But, you know, there's a lot of personal stuff there too, like becoming a mum or, you know, for me just, you know, being married to my husband Justin, who's, you know, my absolute rock and just the coolest person ever and my best friend, to then us having our three kids and the life that we kind of lead together as a family, and, you know, that's amazing, let alone the stuff that, you know, I get to do, you know, every day here.
Yeah. So. And I might add in there too, Justin is the biggest promoter of David Mead too. When I up on, we had some technical difficulties. I was talking about Justin being the best promoter of David Mead.
Yes.
Whenever we have meetings,
he's your official hype guy.
Yeah. And he's throwing stats out there. So thanks, Justin. One final recommendation to those, you know, either a suggestion, recommendation, what people should or shouldn't do. You're an expert in this area now, in my opinion anyway. So what do you think people should or shouldn't do?
We were discussing this earlier, is I just would love the call to action to be educate yourself in any means or ways possible. So if there's an issue that you personally are facing or your family or your community is, there's so many resources out there, especially we're on social media, sure, there's positives and negatives to socials, sure, but the positive part is that we get the ability to see what others are doing in particular spaces, especially in health and education, and educate yourself as much as you can. be part of the solution rather than add to the problem. And it's just about doing and taking that first step, and it's all about action.
Thank you very much, Bron. I've been an absolute superstar, but I've had a great chat. We did have, for those wondering, if you're viewing this and you're seeing that the video has changed from a boardroom to Jackson's airport, my phone storage filled up and I had to obviously delete some too many videos, selfies or whatever they are, got them off my phone, and then we got the final end of it. So, yeah, thank you very much, Bron. It's been great chatting, and, yeah, let's go SBBF.
Team SBBF, let's go.
We've got the fist bump in there too.
I don't know how great that was, though.